Scott Bakula, you famously leaped into so many different bodies on your show, Quantum Leap. Had you ever leapt into the body of Abraham Lincoln before this run at Ford's Theater?
No.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 18th year, number 931, Scott Bakula's Lincoln. Last week, between our performances in Rockville, Maryland and Reston, Virginia, I got to visit Washington, D.C. and see my old friend Scott Bakula play Abraham Lincoln in Herbert Mitgang's one-man show, Mr. Lincoln, at Ford's Theater. Ford's Theater, of course, is where President Lincoln was shot on April 14, 1865, so seeing Scott bring him back to life on that stage was incredibly powerful, sort of like stepping into a time machine, in fact, which Scott knows all about from his years playing Sam Beckett on Quantum Leap.
The rules of time travel on my show were that I could only time travel within my own lifetime. Now, we fudged that for an episode because Sam Beckett's great-grandfather fought in the Civil War. So we did a Civil War episode, and we had all the Civil War reenactment guys come out, and they had a ball, and so we stretched it to that one time to go past that. Of course, I leapt into a chimpanzee's body, but that was in my own lifetime, and we stretched that there that our DNA is, you know, compatible, et cetera, et cetera. So we did a little fudging, but no, Abraham Lincoln, the closest I got to an historical figure, I got to a lot. I was in Dr. Ruth's body for an episode. which was funny, and she passed recently, and that really touched me that I had to spend time with her, and what a wonderful person and interesting, captivating person she was in character.
Yeah,
then we did the Lee Harvey Oswald episode.
Right,
I leapt into his body, and there were other folks, but. The nature of Quantum Leap was that it was kind of an everyman story, you know, and not as wrapped up in big movie ideas, you know, about, well, you know, because people would say, well, what, you know, why couldn't you have leapt back? And well, you can't change stuff that we already know has ended. So you can change people's lives because we all do that every day by making a left turn or a right turn. Or saying yes to a project or no to a project or whatever, you know, we all do that. This is my first time ever into Abraham Lincoln's body.
Well, and it's great that you talk about the rules of time travel, because I've long believed that the theater is legitimately the greatest, closest thing we have to a time machine, because it takes a group of people together back in time. And to see you as Abraham Lincoln on the stage of Ford's Theater is the closest I can imagine to actual time travel. It was just an incredibly magical event. And so I'm grateful as a viewer, but also envious for you as an actor that you get to play this role on that stage. Was Lincoln ever a role that you had aspired to?
No. I've always been an admirer of Lincoln and an amateur sleuth about Lincoln. And I think I felt certain simpatico because I grew up in Missouri and he grew up in Illinois. And when I was shooting The Informant, we shot over in Decatur. And I went to the Lincoln Museum in Springfield, which is, I highly recommend. I mean, I never dreamed of any of this shit that I've done, you know, in the business. I went to New York City hoping I could leave my somewhat small pond in St. Louis and earn a living as a theater actor, and really as a musical theater comedy actor. Mm-hmm. That was the extent of my dream. It was not even a dream that I, had growing up, because I didn't live in a family like that, that was a theater family. And obviously my kids, your kids, can aspire to that, some version of what we have done, because they've been around it if they so chose. But my family, the closest I had an uncle. My mom's brother had gone to New York. He was a great singer and went to New York and had some early success singing in some Broadway shows in the 50s, I guess, or maybe the 40s. But had come back. And so that was kind of like the little crack that I snuck out of and through, because, well, Uncle Ed did it. And why don't I get a chance to go? Why don't I try it? You know, and that was the closest that was the little kind of opportunity that I had. But so, no, I'm kind of always envious of people. I don't know about you, that, and you may have known your whole life that you were going to be an actor, but, and a writer and everything else that you've done. But I was kind of very one foot in front of the other. I grew up in St. Louis. My dad's a lawyer. I guess I like to perform. So I'll be a trial lawyer. I'd be good at that in front of people and summations and all that kind of stuff sounded like a job that I could enjoy until I got to college and just partied my ass off and then said, what am I doing? I was in business school, and the first day of business school, the teacher says, like many business schools, my goal is to fork as many people as possible because there are too many accountants in the world. And I was like, well, I think I pay your salary and I'm out.
Well, that's fun that, I mean, it's great to hear all of that, because I love that music, a guy who went to New York to do, he thought, musical comedy, and musical theater boy and then TV boy, brings a surprising amount of gravitas to the role of this country lawyer, which you might also have been.
Yes.
I mean, it feels like you bring a little bit of your father into your portrayal of Lincoln.
Yeah, I little bit, but my dad wasn't a trial lawyer. He was a corporate lawyer. So that was my only break from the thing. Was like, I don't want to be a corporate lawyer, but I could be a trial lawyer. So,
right.
But certainly I played a lawyer on TV, several lawyers. So I know how to handle it. all my training. It's a kind of funny full circle. I certainly can relate to the country part of Lincoln. I can't relate to his abject poverty, but I know a lot of people. My grandmother on my dad's side was, one of eight kids and lived on a farm in the middle of Missouri, and were, dirt poor. Her mom died when she was 12, and she took over. She was the oldest, so she raised seven kids and took care of, her dad and the farm and everything. And she was worn out by the time she had one kid. And I'm surprised she even had one kid, and that was my dad. But so I know a lot of these people, and I know that struggle in that part of the country. And it's still, to me, is just fascinating that Lincoln came out of that. It's just mind blowing.
How did the part come to you? How did this production come to you?
I've worked a bunch at Ford's over the years, starting as early as 1979. And then there was a long gap. And then in 2006, I went back to do Shenandoah there, and which was a big full circle theater experience for me, because when I moved to New York City, the guy that I'd worked with in St. Louis, who had encouraged me to go to New York, said, as I was leaving, there's a new show in town. It's called Shenandoah, and lots of parts for guys in it. And the first day I got to New York in the old days, when there was a backstage, if you recall that, he said, buy a backstage and you get there and start, you know, go to auditions. I wasn't in a union, so I had to go to open calls. And I got a job in a non-union version of Shenandoah. And that became basically for the next 5 years almost like my waiter job. So I got my, I ended up getting my union card in the chorus of a summer stock production. And with a lot of really, it was Christine Ebersole's first show out of college. It was in the chorus. I would jump, oh, hey, we need 5 weeks of replacement in the national tour. Will you go out and do, oh yeah, Philly and Baltimore, sure. Atlanta, I'll do that. I did it in some, I did summer stock versions of it. My first summer stock job was Eastern Seaboard, the Straw Hat Circuit, doing Shenandoah. I did it at Paper Mill Playhouse with John Raid. And, you know, I did all these different versions of it. And played brothers, played the suitor, played brothers, played bad guys, everything you could play. And then in 2006, I came back and played Charlie Anderson, the father. So the first show I saw in New York when I got there, because it was still on Broadway, I saw John Cullum. John Cullum did a great episode of the famous La Mancha episode on Quantum Leap, where he was the aging star and he was a drunk and fell down the stairs. And I replaced him as the understudy and came on. And that's how we made all that come to life. And then in, so that was, I saw that in 1976, and in 2006, I'm on the stage at Ford's Theater doing Charlie Anderson in Shenandoah. So.
And just before you came to do this, you were telling me you just did Man of La Mancha at the Peterborough Players in New Hampshire.
I did, which people have been begging for. Fans of Quantum Leap have been begging for since we did the show, you know, on TV back in 80. That episode was probably in 1990 or something like that. So there's a lot of history here. And so I'm thrilled to be back. It's a storied place, obviously. There is something kind of surreal and magical about the whole thing. So they called me and asked me, you know, if I wanted to do this before the election, that was the mandate. And we got to do it this fall. It's not going to be a long run. So I was like, okay, all of that's good. And, you know, the downside is it's 90 minutes of me talking.
Well, you give good talk.
You're very kind.
This is Elizabeth Dennehy, otherwise known as Lieutenant Commander Shelby from Star Trek Next Generation. Welcome to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? In the next 3 weeks, we'll be performing our special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged in Cornelius, North Carolina, just outside Charlotte, and Greeley, Colorado. Then we'll perform the Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged from December 9 to 11 at the South Padre Island Convention Center in Texas. And next March of 2025, we'll return to the Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts for the 3-week Lort Theater premiere of The Comedy of Hamlet, a prequel. Check out the touring page at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Scott Bakula, whose run of Mr. Lincoln closes this Sunday night, October 13th, 2024.
Over and above your performance as Lincoln, the play is beautifully designed and intelligently written and experienced by an audience of what felt like a combination of locals and tourists. Mm-hmm. Who are in town to see the sights and coming to Ford's Theater specifically to see Abraham Lincoln. And I expected there would be a round of applause for Scott Bakula when the lights come up.
Yeah.
First come up. And there wasn't. There was just this respectful quiet and an audience going, oh, my God, there he is. And it is magical. It's like a museum or a memory coming to life when the lights rise on you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and you feel that in the audience. It's so funny because, you had come to see the show and then you commented on that after the show. And last night was the first night when the lights came up. There was a huge round of applause.
Oh, damn it. I jinxed it. I apologize.
And all I could do was think about you. And I was like, okay, I got to get back to doing the show now, but I can't wait to tell Austin that there was a certain, I have to say that it felt different than the courtesy entrance applause. I strongly dislike entrance applause. Somebody's talking about, well, now and then you're going to come in, you're going to get the entrance applause. And I was like, I don't want to beg for it. I really don't want, I don't want to force it. And if, you know, if it happens, it happens. But so often there's an assumption that here comes, you know, I remember seeing Richard Burton on, you know, in Little Foxes or whatever with Liz Taylor. And when they walked on stage, you applauded. But I don't remember applauding for Angela Lansbury in Sweeney Todd.
Right.
And maybe I'm wrong about that, but the way it happened felt a little bit like they were applauding what you're talking about. Oh my God. Instead of me hearing people kind of whispering, and there's a lot of movement and nudging, and I know that they're like, oh my God, there he is. And he's right by the box and all that's going on. It was like there was a welcoming of Lincoln on stage.
Right. A hero's return, a welcome back. Yeah.
A little bit. And then yesterday also in the matinee, it was an applause day. They applauded after the Gettysburg Address. And that was like, well, and that kind of, that was interesting. That has not happened before, and I don't think it will happen again. It wasn't because I gave an absolutely the best Gettysburg Address that's ever been done. It was one of my better ones. And so now I'm like, well, have I been laying down on that? And I need to, you know, I need to step up my game a little bit so I can, is that something to pursue? And it's like, well, wait a minute. He is in a cemetery. He's not going for an applause here. So, you know, the theater, that's the beauty of the theater. You just, people, if you haven't done it, you know, it's just, you got to do it because there's nothing like it. And it's good, bad, and ugly, you know, and it's just an event every night.
It's the Gettysburg Address is a pretty good piece of writing, but it's not Billy Bigelow in Carousel.
No.
it's a good, speaking of a good bit of writing, there's a moment where Lincoln is he references Shakespeare specifically and says, as Shakespeare said in Othello, and then he quotes a line, but later in the play, talking about the aftermath of the Civil War, he launches into Claudius's monologue. Oh, my offenses rank, it smells to heaven, it has a primal eldest cursed upon it, a brother's murder. And I loved the use of Shakespeare, but I also it was a great insight into Lincoln about how he must have felt. Yes, I preserved the Union, but at a huge cost. And again, your performance walks that line of, folksy Lincoln-esque wits, but also the deep pain the guy must have been enduring.
Yeah, I think that's been interesting to explore, and we went down that path, you know, to try and to not, you know, I just didn't want to stand up there and recite Lincoln's famous speeches, although we dabble and touch some, we hit in their entirety, some we just grab a section of the first inaugural, a smaller section of the second inaugural, but the Shakespeare stuff is delightful. I was just talking with the dramaturge yesterday about it, and thinking about, here's a guy that's devouring anything he can read, and he's just sucking it in, and he's sucking in language
like a sponge.
Yeah, it's not, and it's not like it was being spoken around him, or he, you know, had a had an actor in the family, like the Booth family. He was just, and then who, what? I mean, there are many. I mean, we do Robert Burns. We do. He was totally crazed about getting books, and they and Richard told me yesterday that in the White House, he would send requests over to the library. And get stacks of books to be sent over to him to so because he could keep reading. But to pick up that language, which, you know, we're only 250 years after Shakespeare left the planet, and to pick it up and then use it like that and identify his deep personal feelings about losing life and on both sides, he felt, and we talked a lot about that as we were developing it. He was not, you know, so northern centric that he hated the South. Right? There was none of that. He was trying to navigate a horrible, difficult, impossible situation. You know, he says at his departure in Chicago on the train, I leave now with a task before me greater than that which rested upon Washington. And you're like, yeah, yeah. Because Washington at least had everybody around him for the most part. There were Tories, obviously, and people like that. But for the most part, people were on the same. Let's, even though there was division between this, you know, in creating the country. But the goal was to get the English out. And they felt like they were outsiders that they were fighting against, as opposed to neighbors, and that is he took the amount of deaths. That's, you know, when he talks about over 500,000 men of both sides, it really affected him. And you know, who knows if he hadn't been assassinated, how long he would have actually lived, because he was really consumed and beaten down by the war the pain of even having to call. I tried to touch on a little bit when he has to, because of secession, because of Sumter, Fort Sumter, and because of people attacking the government of the United States that he's taken an oath to protect, he has to call out the militia, and he just absolutely does not want to do that.
It felt to me watching you that Lincoln is a role a little bit like Hamlet. You need to age into the role. Despite however old the character is, there is something there, again, that gravitas, that wisdom, lived experience. It feels like a role that you've aged beautifully into. Even though it looks like from the posters and seeing you now in person that maybe you're not doing your own beard work.
They said you want to grow your own beard. And I said, I do not.
Yeah.
I do not. And you can put a little, you can add some hair on the top and you can color my own hair. But that's, you know, I you're going to have to do the beard. I did the sideburns, you know, as we were talking about. And I'm not going to walk around for 2 months with that beard on every day.
I love that you're getting to do more theater now. Is that a thing that you hope to be doing more of?
Yeah. I mean, I've said, I'm extremely grateful and I've been very lucky to have the television and movie career that I've had on the other coast. But it was never my goal to do that. And people always say, what's your first love? Do you like TV, film, theater? Theater is always my answer. And I've always said that, you know, when I have a chance and I'm able to continue to do theater, that's kind of where I would like to. That's how I started. That's how I kind of want to end up. And this year has been a phenomenal year for that. And be careful what you wish for, I guess. But it's just fulfilling in a different way. And as you know, and there's just nothing like it. It's a lot, people don't get, really don't understand 8 shows a week and what that entails and what kind of discipline that entails and sacrifices that entails. It's not, you know, we say, oh, we work horrible long hours in TV and film, and we do. But usually you go home at on the weekends and you go home at night and you're taken care of in a different way than you are in the theater. The theater's kind of, you know, we expect people to take care of themselves and be adults and manage their lives and get there every night and do the show and stay healthy and as best they can. And there's not a lot of coddling that goes on. Work with fellow actors, and you're experiencing the same joy, agony, together. And there's a certain camaraderie in that. It's much more of a communal event than a TV show or a film. Unless you're in, you know, sometimes a movie or a TV show can be very gratifying in that sense. But there's just nothing like live theater. Live anything, whether you're doing stand-up or singing or whatever, any kind of live performance, there's an exchange that happens that is fulfilling.
Would you want to do more one-person shows? I mean, I know you to be a very friendly, ensemble-y guy. It seems like it would be more fun to do a show with other actors.
Yes. I'm going to reserve my answer on that. Because I don't want you hunting me down saying, and now there you are. My friend Jimmy Whitmore was telling me about his dad doing a Will Rogers one-man show years and years and years ago. And I thought, hang on a second. That's not a bad idea. But my answer right now is no. I prefer working. I got into the business to exchange emotions and feelings and share experiences with other people in a different way than you do in any other business. And I still enjoy that. And coming from La Mancha, which was a, you know, love fest with the audience, with everybody in the cast and just in getting to do that with Chelsea. And that was, you know, one extreme to the other. Now I'm just by myself. There are 2 stagehands backstage. That's it. Pulling raising the angels at the end of the show and setting up the show. There's a stage manager and 2 assistant stage managers. And that's it. And then I have, you know, the lady helping me with the wig and the beard, make the beard every day, Dana, and then the gal helping me with costumes and setting all that stuff up, Connie, and that's it. So I'm in the backstage area. Hey everybody. Oh, it's, hey, how was my day? Pretty good. How was that show tonight? Pretty good. It was all right. Well, not so good. And then you kind of come off stage and you would say good show to everybody and you go upstairs and you start thinking about what you did right or what you did wrong. And it's kind of like, oh, the show's over.
And you don't get that laugh and you can't blame any of the other actors.
That's exactly right. Which we love to do.
We do. The only things actors like more than bitching about the roles they didn't get is bitching about the roles they have.
Well, I can't bitch about this one. That would be sacrilege.
It would be. It would be. It's too good.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Comedy Podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Scott Bakula's performances as Mr. Lincoln at Ford's Theater end this Sunday night, October 13th, 2024. Go to fords.org for venue and ticket information. Then send us your incredible resurrections via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks as always to Man of a Certain Age, Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Susan Fanning. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Elizabeth Dennehy, the only other Starship Admiral I've interviewed on the podcast. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 931 2793rds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
I love that you mentioned Jimmy Whitmore, because he directed me at least two times, maybe three, on 24 and Providence.
Yeah.
And he gave me my favorite bit of direction ever. And I've used it with other actors I've directed. I had to hand an envelope, a letter to somebody in my scene in Providence. I was once again playing a lawyer. And he comes up to me. He said, we did one take. He comes up and he said, Mr. Titchener, would it shred your envelope of truth to hold the letter higher?
That's Jimmy. That is the beauty of that man. He is something else. There's nobody like him. We've got recordings of him doing stuff, acting out stuff, telling that here's how I want this action scene to go, you know, and he's like, he's in at a table in a, just with the, you know, the heads of all the departments, and like, oh, this guy's going to come down here, and he's going to, and a boom, and a bang, and he gets ahead of the thing, and it goes on for minutes, and at the end of it, and at the end, the guy gets shot, and he falls down flat on the floor, you know, I mean, he's knocked me off stools. He said, Scotty, you got to take the hit like this, boom, and he's like, bang, and I'm like, I almost broke my neck here. Yeah, well, that's how I want it to be. You got to go.
We did it on Baba Black Sheep.
Right. I just was talking. He called me the other day, and because he was connected with Peterborough Players, but we were talking about Ford's Theater. Mm. You know, my dad did a one-man show of Will Rogers, and we opened it there in the Ford's Theater. He said, and I drove the truck, and we drove all over the country doing that with the old man.
Amazing.
I'd set it up, and I was the stage manager, and I did the lights, and I did the thing, and then we'd pack it up, and I'd get the set out, and we'd get in the truck, and we'd go somewhere else. And he'd say, me and the old man just driving around the United States doing Will Rogers. And
I was that's amazing.
That's amazing.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.